grow up on the streets, you start thinking you're invincible. Nothing can touch you. You never really lose. Go to arrest some freak? Find out you aren't as invincible as you thought.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Ramblecast. I am your host, Chris Cesarano, and joining me today is Jerry.
Hello, all.
And not Wesley. And Eric. No.
Nope.
It's only two of us this time. Sorry, yep. Everybody. There's a reason for that, because this week we are going to be discussing Murdered Soul Suspect, and we're going to be all about the spoilers this week. Which means if you haven't played Murdered Soul Suspect, but you really want to, or you're curious enough, you're not going to want to listen to this podcast. Or if you just don't give a crap about spoilers, though, or if you have played it, then go ahead, listen in, because we're just going to go right into it for the most part. And this is probably going to be the format of this podcast for a while, just finding games or movies and just discussing them. So if I wasn't trying to brand myself, I'd probably rename the podcast Spoilerth. So, because we'll be discussing stuff with spoilers full on. So, sorry if that's a bad thing. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, Murdered Soul Suspect, and me and Jerry were the only ones in our little group that played it, so it was a game that I really loved from last year. I didn't get to play it until the very end. It was a game that was always on my radar throughout the entire year. I liked the idea of it. I liked the concept. Just something about it seemed interesting to me. So I decided to rent it from Gamefly at the end of the year, because I was able to get a very cheap renewal. And I played the game in a day, basically. I played like the first level, quote-unquote, the evening before, and then, you know, me and my brother, we just had the Christmas holiday day, week, whatever, to ourselves. Just sat down, he watched me play it, I played it, and throughout the day we'd just take breaks, discuss it, and then by the very end it was just, that was a really satisfying experience for me. So it ended up being one of my favorite, if not my favorite game of 2014. And it was a surprise too, because up until then I was like, you know what? I know what my top games are. They're this, this, and that. And then all of a sudden this game came along and was like, wow, I'm kind of surprised. How was your experience with it, Jerry?
So I played it, your memory of it's a little fresher than mine. I played it on PS4 last summer-ish, I think. I wanted to play it just because I'd seen some of its coverage before it came out, and it just sounded like a cool idea. And when it came out, the reviews were sort of all over the place, but I was like, no, I want to give this a shot because it looks different and it looks cool. And I liked it as well. I did a review of this on geekbravado.com, and it's one of the things I talked about was it was actually the last game developed by Airtight Games. They actually went under just after it came out. And Airtight was a developer that kind of had a history of making games that had good ideas and not the best execution.
Interesting. And I was going to bring that
like
up.
Like, they did Dark Void, they did Quantum Conundrum, all this stuff that was that was different and had cool concepts but didn't really hit necessarily when it came out. And this was kind of the same, but the thing that I thought was interesting about this game was that it was, because Square Enix published it, but I didn't notice until I went and watched the credits that all of the like design leads and stuff on this game were actually Japanese. It looks like Airtight either assisted developing it or did the majority of the development legwork, but this was like an idea that someone in Square Enix, I presume, came up with. And it's kind of a weird hodgepodge that way. And you can see in some of the ideas in this game, you can sort of see that you can see that. You can almost see ties in some of the narrative in that to something like, and my brain just blanked on it, the DS and later iOS game that Capcom did. Oh my God, where you're playing a ghost trying to solve his own murder? Ghost Trick.
Ghost Trick, okay.
Yeah, this sort of, you can see some sort of narrative elements of this in that as well, because, yeah, you're a detective trying to solve his own murder, and it really plays like it's a third-person game, but it's not very heavy on action, and it's really more of an adventure game, which is not something you see on, in gaming in general these days, particularly on consoles. That's sort of what intrigued me about it. And yeah, it's a deeply flawed game that you can tell probably had a lot of its original vision cut out of it in order to get it out.
Yeah.
But it's really, really cool in spite of that. And it's a game, it's one of those, it sounds cliche, but it's one of those things, you know, people say, you can tell this game was made with a lot of heart. And that's really what this is, I think.
Yeah, this was a game that you could definitely tell the developers had a passion for what they were doing. And that's the thing, I don't necessarily know where the idea, I mean, actually, you know what? We could do a really quick research on Wikipedia.
I don't know if Wikipedia talks a lot about the origins of the development, but you can see here actually in its credits, like look at the director. I cannot do Japanese names. The director is like Yosuke Shiokawa. The producer is Naoto Sugiyama. Like it's all, a lot of it is very Japanese people.
All right, according to Wikipedia, Yosuke Shiokawa, creative director at Square Enix, came up with the idea of a game where the player was a ghost and pitched it to the development team at Airtight Games. Airtight then came up with various concepts surrounding the ghost idea, some of which were almost superhero stories, according to Matt Brunner. They had trouble at first integrating Western and Eastern philosophies regarding ghosts. There were a lot of assumptions that we weren't aware of that we were making on both sides. But basically, Square Enix wanted to make a game to appeal more towards the Western market. The basic idea was brought up by Yosuke Shiokawa at Square Enix. And then Airtight kind of worked with them and ran with it. So it was kind of both. It was kickstarted by a Japanese mind, but it was kind of both working on the game. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why it has a very interesting nature to its afterlife kind of a thing, because it's, I mean, you can kind of see it. I mean, Japanese, like, their view of undead, like, hell, their view of horror. I mean, ghosts are kind of ghosts and spirits are kind of a big thing in their culture in a different way than they are here. So there's probably a lot of just different assumptions going. I mean, as they say, like, everyone's doing different assumptions on both sides, so you could kind of get a feel for that, I guess. It doesn't feel like your average, you know, I'm playing as a ghost story. There is some other stuff going on, and it does, but it definitely does have mostly a Western feel for the most part. I will say that.
Yeah. And it takes place in, you know, a Massachusetts town and things like that. Like, yeah, it's set, well, it's set in the U.S.
They call it Salem, Massachusetts, and it is technically, it does have a history of the Salem witch trials, but they're
that
not. It
kind of plays into the back lore of it, but not so much into the main story.
Well, no, I mean, it really is kind of core to it, but
yeah.
I mean, actually, you know, it is very core to it. They just, they don't beat you over the head with it. It's, let me finish. I mean, it's quote-unquote Salem, Massachusetts, but it's not actually modeled after the real Salem, Massachusetts town. So they use the name, they use the lore, the history. They don't use the town, so if you're from Salem, Massachusetts, you're probably not going to recognize a lot of the town in the game. It'll all be made up, it'll all be fictional for the purpose of the game, which, for the most part, I'm fine with. But that's the thing, like, even if it's a fictional Salem, they still do a lot to give it its own personality and character. Salem in this game, I mean, you wander through it and you learn the different locations, you hear people referencing them throughout the game, and then you'll see, like, just as there are human ghosts, the town itself kind of has spiritual, like, ghostly presence. Like, there will be, like, you'll walk through areas where you'll see a burning home because that's what happened to it once upon a time. No one alive will see that, of course, but the ghosts still see it and you're still impeded by it. You'll, every once in a while, like, if you're walking through the park, you'll see in the distance ghostly figure, like very, very fuzzy, very cloudy kind of a thing, but a ghostly figure with a noose around its neck kind of a thing. Like you see, and sometimes you'll see figures of just like people just sitting around and everything. So it's, they definitely really try and give you this sense that you're open into this new world, this other world of the of the afterlife, where you're seeing things from the past, from the current. You're seeing it all work together, and mostly what you're seeing is people that haven't been able to leave this realm behind yet. They haven't been able to settle their businesses, their business.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting, I guess, for people who haven't played it, sort of what Chris has been alluding to here is sort of the core concept of how this game works is that you actually get murdered, as the title implies. You get murdered right at the start of the game. You're a sort of, you know, sort of a gruff, cynical detective, you know, street-hardened detective guy who is trying to solve a murder and ends up getting murdered yourself. And then you're trying to, over the course of the game, solve your own murder and get roped into a bunch of other stuff. But you're playing the game as a ghost, so you can see the real world, but you're sort of living in the spirit world. So you can see and interact with a lot of other things that normal humans can't. And that's what sort of ties all this together and sort of where the town itself kind of gets integrated into things in the town's history in that. And you have sort of a main story thread that you're doing, but there are actually little side quests and stuff you can do in the game, which is basically helping other spirits out by sort of solving some of either how they died or other elements of their past to sort of, I guess, help them pass on into the afterlife is kind of what you're doing there. That's kind of the core idea of it. And it's very interesting because, like I said, it plays kind of like an adventure game. You're wandering around this town. You're wandering into different environments. You're meeting different people. There's no real inventory in the game per se. There are collectibles in the game which you know, give little extra bits of exposition in that. They're certainly not necessary.
They're not necessary, but I feel like they all add to the setting, and that's, I think,
they're
worth
doing.
And that's the thing. I think that's where, like, I'm looking right now again at the Wikipedia page, and like I'm looking at the scores from most of these major publications, and it's amazing because the game received mid to poor ratings for the most part. And it says the criticisms are centered around poor combat, short length, lack of replay value, and lack of difficulty. And I'm like, okay, is any of this not applicable to The Walking Dead Season 1? And
yeah,
stuff like that? I mean, it's...
To a degree, that's true.
I don't think people viewed this game as an adventure game. Because to me, okay, if you're the kind of person that played L.A. Noir and were like, you know what? I really wish they just took all the shooter bits out of this game. You'll probably like Murdered Soul Suspect. It doesn't have as in-depth an investigation. I'm going to be flat out, it doesn't. But it's all about the investigation. The quote-unquote combat is not really a major focus. In fact, what you learn in the very beginning of the game is applicable throughout the entire thing. It never changes, and yet I like that because it's just another activity to vary things up, and I was worried that by the end of the game they were going to try and add so many different situations, scenarios, button combinations or whatever to the combat, so many options that would just distract from the core game, cause me to have to restart over and over again, and I never did. They never had too much shit going on.
Yeah,
they have just enough, and it to me, I mean, it was perfectly fine.
I think as treated as an adventure game because it's not a point and click game, but you can treat it. I think it's best viewed through the lens of that older type of game where it's not action heavy. It's, you know, it's designed to. It's a world that you're exploring. It's designed to not be difficult in the sense that there's a lot of twitch-based gameplay or things like that. It's designed to be taken at kind of a slow pace, and you know, experienced in that way. It's a lot more like traditional adventure games or even stuff like The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead has more tense moments in it by design with how its dialogue works in that. But that's the thing is that to me, what little coverage I saw of this game before it came out, it felt to me like it was pitched that way. Like that's kind of what it was. But the way a lot of people saw it when it came out was that they were under the belief that this was supposed to be, you know, either a more action heavy title. And maybe that's just cause, you know, it was a third person console game and some people see that and sort of draw their own conclusions based on that. But that's the thing is, while it's not a flawless game by any means and it does have a lot of problems, I do think some of the poor reception it got from critics was due to the way it was looked at and the way, you know, the way it was perceived versus what it was. And maybe it's because it is a bit of an aberration to see a game like this in the modern era on consoles especially, but that's also I think what, you know, pulled us to it as well.
And that's the thing, like this is just one of those perfect examples where I could sit here and bitch about other game reviewers all day, because it's I mean, let's face it. Who are the first people to complain about everything looking the same when they go to E3?
Yeah.
Game reviewers.
Yeah.
Murdered Soul Suspect is an adventure game without being a Telltale adventure game. It's not a point-and-click adventure. It's its own style of adventure game.
No.
And now it gets milling. Like, do you want well-executed, interesting ideas, or do you want the same thing you've been getting the whole time? You can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't just have an innovative execution of the first person shooter because it's the first person shooter. It is limited based on its perspective alone.
Yeah.
You can have interesting, nice little ideas within that, but you're never going to get a reinvention of the entire perspective.
Yeah.
Closest you're able to get right now is the Oculus Rift. So. Yeah.
I mean, I do think some of the criticisms of this game were valid in the sense that because it does definitely feel, you know, just as someone who's played a lot of games and who has seen a lot of games that came out in various states of good or bad, is that this definitely does feel like it was a game that ran into either budget or time constraints, which given the, you know, what happened to Airtight right after it came out is probably pretty true. It does feel like this is a game that had this is kind of what I said in my review of it, is this is a game that feels like it had a much bigger vision behind it that got partway there and then they couldn't finish it. Like, it definitely feels like the town of Salem, when they built it in the game, was supposed to have a lot more going on and stuff to do in it than it ended up having. And it feels things like, because the only real thing you could call combat in this game is that there are segments in the game where there are sort of, I forget what they're called, but they're basically evil spirits.
They're demons, basically.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's maybe just what they call them, is demons.
Yeah.
And they're basically patrolling around in some of the areas in the game, and it kind of turns into a mild stealth game at that point, where you have to avoid these things because they will wreck you if they see you. And the way you deal with them is by sneaking up behind them and pressing a button, and you do something that basically banishes them.
It's basically the execution from Mark of the Ninja. You get behind them, you hold a button, and then it tells you to either press down and X or up and square.
Yeah, it's a very light QTE.
Yeah, very light. It was frustrating for me the first time I did it, but
and
you know, once
some
you
of
get
that
the hang
stuff,
of it, it's easy.
Some of that stuff, yeah, it's not difficult, but it also felt like a little bit of a – it didn't feel like it added much, and it felt a little bit like a padding mechanic, like something that was there to make some of the levels go a little longer. And
it also feels
like something that they had a bit – like I said, the whole game feels in many places like the things that they had bigger ideas for that they just didn't have the time or money to do.
See, on the other hand, I feel like it was a really good way of kind of breaking up the experience, and that's one of the things that I really liked, is you have the investigation and then you have the race and stuff, and you're able to get a different sort of play style with each one. You're interacting with the environment differently each time. It's a way to keep things from being too monotonous to me. I mean, I didn't mind it, and you're right. I mean, it's got a bit of a stealth game-ish style to it, but I feel like it was all – I mean, it's not perfect. You're right. There were honestly a couple that I feel like were not designed all that greatly, because it becomes almost, I mean, the very last one you go through, I'm going to admit, I really hated doing, because, and I feel like I got through it out of luck, because the you might want to describe them as wraiths, actually. Wraiths.
Yeah.
The wraiths, because they are ghostly apparitions, versus what people normally think of when they think of demon. But they can't see through walls, even though they too can actually travel through them. So what you got to do is you got to find this sort of spirit cloud to hide in. You can hide in it and they won't necessarily sense you by default. But if they get too close, they'll realize where you are. They'll be able to sniff you out, basically. But the thing is, you kind of hide behind walls and you hide within these little clouds, and you figure out the pattern, the patrol pattern of these creatures, and you got to make sure when you try and kill one, another one doesn't see you. And that becomes, it's more of a puzzle. So that becomes the puzzle, and towards the very end, the window is so small that it's almost inevitable you'll get spotted. And then after that, you got to run and you got to hide and you got to switch between the different clouds they try and search for you. And that's part of the issue, is by that point at the end, two of them were searching for me. I only had three clouds to bounce around. So mm-hmm. I was able, I mean, and they let out a shriek when they find you. So they kept on finding me as I'm trying to bounce around between them. They're never getting me. They're never killing me. But it felt like an almost endless loop that I was not going to be able to escape from. So, I mean, yeah, it is not perfect. They did need a bit more polish and design on setting up some of those patrols as puzzles. But for most of the game, again, for me, it was just a good way to break up the experience. It was, okay, now I'm in a completely different mindset. I get to do this for a while. Then after that, it's like you get the relief. You have a brief moment of tension, and then you have a relief where you're just glad to be investigating again. And mm-hmm. I liked, and maybe that's the thing, I liked that quote-unquote stealth section, because to me it was more of a puzzle section. And after Mark of the Ninja, that's the thing. Mark of the Ninja kind of rethought how I feel, rethought my approach to looking at a stealth game. And a proper stealth game to me now at this point is more about the puzzle of how to get through this area.
Yeah. And I think that's how, in many ways, stealth games are best approached, as is almost a different kind of puzzle game. And that's the thing. I didn't really mind the stealth stuff in the game. I didn't find it too big a put off, but I could see how that they maybe would have wanted to flesh that out a little bit more. I mean, what I really wish, and this, if anything, is a compliment towards the game, and, you know, one of the major criticisms as well was that it didn't necessarily have a lot of content in it. And I do wish that, I thought the core story itself was actually pretty good, when it came down to it, but I do, it would have been nice to have more involved side quests to do and just more stuff to see and experience in the world. A lot of the world did feel a little barren, and some of the environments did feel a little small. Definitely would have been nice to have seen that expanded out a little bit more. Like, this is a game where it really feels like if they would have given it, you know, if they would have given it another year, it probably, you know, I mean, you could say that about just about every game, you know, if this had another year, what could they have done? But this feels like one that's like that. Like, what I think, and I think the main problem that a lot of people have with this, and I can't say I blame them, is that I don't know, I guess Square did this just to try to get back as much money as they could, but this was put out as a full $60 game. And this feels like that type of, like, you hear a lot on podcasts and other places now, people talking about the sort of death of the mid-tier console game the last few years.
And it feels more like a mid-tier to you?
It feels like a game, like, I ended up renting the game as well at the time, because I was just out of my unemployed phase at that point, so I didn't have a lot of spending money, but that's a game that I personally wouldn't have felt ripped off spending $60 on. But it also feels like the kind of game that a few years ago, back when the mid-tier console game existed, that they would have priced at something like 40. And I think it would have been better received if it was in that tier, because I can see that when you're comparing that against other titles, even around the same time that cost $60, you might look at one versus the other in terms of what they offer and go, well, this may not play in that league. For most people, I think it probably would have done a little bit better had it been in that $40 price point. But I liked it to the point where I wouldn't have minded paying $60 for it. And I've actually bought it again on PC since I bought it for $40 on PC just to, when I had the money to show my support for it, even though Airtight's gone now.
Yeah, you're showing your support to Square Enix and hoping they publish more games like it.
Exactly, yeah, being like, hey, this was cool, maybe do another thing like it.
Yeah, when they kind of are. I mean, they are doing Don't Nod second game.
Yes, they are.
So I'm at least glad that Square Enix is willing to take chances.
They're trying, like, they're, you know, most big publishers these days are playing it safe, but you are seeing from companies like this, and actually Ubisoft as well, interestingly enough, these little smaller experimental titles coming out once in a while where they're just like, you know, we don't have to bet the company on this, like a big AAA title, but let's try this out and see how it does, see what people think. And I like that that's starting to happen more. And this kind of feels like, I have a feeling when, I would love to see some insider account of what really happened with Murdered Soul Suspect someday, but I have a feeling that this was a game that they definitely had AAA grandiose visions for and that ended up getting pared down. But it's kind of a shame, because if this game, I think, was originally conceived as one of those more smaller, experimental, more focused titles, it might have even... This is a game that might have even benefited from having constraints like that put around it right out of the gate, I think, to sort of, you know, be like, this is the box you've got, so, you know, build something really cool within that. Interesting.
Right now, at this point, I end up really wondering about people's impression of what is and what is not worth $60. Mm. And like, to me, like, I mean, Destiny is a perfect example, because, and I discussed this on the Gamers with Jobs forum even, to me, Destiny may be quote-unquote lacking in content, but what it really has is a really well-polished combat system that changes and evolves throughout its growing difficulty, and therefore, even when you're replaying the same mission on a higher level and on a harder difficulty, it's different than when you went through that game the first time 20 hours ago or even 10 hours ago. And to me, that's worth, like, that polish is worth the money. Now, Murdered Soul Suspect definitely doesn't have the same level of polish or content, but it's still, if I were to sit down and compare the polish of the experience of Murdered Soul Suspect and the polish of its mechanics of everything that I do in the game versus... especially on the PS3, glitchy, broken experience that is any Telltale game, even if the total price of that Telltale game is maybe half the price of what you pay for Murdered Soul Suspect, I still feel like I got a lot more with Murdered Soul Suspect, especially because I actually was able to walk around the world of Salem.
Yeah.
The combat worked. The puzzles were varied, and I got a good story in a whole package. I got good voice acting. I got good character models. Walking Dead Season 1 had it as well. But the actual performance of the game was worth it. And when you get right down to it, so many of the mechanics and so many of those collectibles and everything that you find, they all wrap into this general the conceit of the game's premise. Those wraiths you fight, they're explained. They're ghosts that spent so long and did not finish their business. They became resentful. They're ghosts that become evil.
Yeah.
That's where the demons and wraiths come from.
They're kind of like ghosts that are driven mad
So they're given a contextual relevance. They're not just there to be video gamey. they're given a reason to be there. And all the collectibles, they're in some way given a reason to be there till end of the story. You find newspaper clippings about the murderer you're trying to find. You find documentation and stuff about the different girls that are the victims. You find memories of your deceased wife, or Ronan's deceased wife, the main character being Ronan.
And getting to his deceased wife is kind of his ultimate end goal. Like, his goal is to get to the part of the afterlife where he can be with her.
Yeah. He wants to get his business settled, you know, for justice and all that, but he also is trying to get, and you know what? And one of the things that I love so much is they used his death as a way of delivering exposition. When he dies, his life flashes before his eyes, and they don't explain his life. They show you clips of it.
Yeah. And you learn that his past life has had troubling moments in it, to say the least.
He's
not necessarily the best and most virtuous human being.
No, but that's the thing. You get so much. He was raised by crooks, literally. Like, his parents themselves were thieves. His dad started giving him tattoos for his crime. Like, his very first crime, he gave him a tattoo for. Yeah. You know, he grew up a hoodlum, you know. He got stabbed and almost died.
Yeah. But he sort of reformed and decided to get on the side of the law. Yep. And in the end, you know, he kind of found his redemption in,
he became a cop. And again, in this brief moment where they're just giving you dialogue, you see that he struggles with they're giving you visuals and dialogue, but they're not saying, oh yeah, then I did this in my life, then I did this. You're seeing it. And you see that he's struggling with one of the other cops, because like some of the cops are like, you know, you're never going to be one of us. You get to see that his brother-in-law helped him. Well, actually, that's the funny thing. You don't even see directly that it's his brother-in-law. Yes, you see his wife. You see that his wife was killed. And you get all of the, you get to see who is Ronan, what drives him. And it's within the first 5 minutes, maybe even less, of the game. And that is, I mean, most games will just begin with an exposition dump. Dragon Age Origins begins with an exposition dump. All right? And that's a game that everyone, like, if you're starting with an exposition dump, then you are fighting to, you're failing to come up with a creative way to explain the world to your audience. Mm-hmm. And here, they took the idea of your life flashing before your eyes when you die to explain that exposition away. And to me, that's just – that's kind of when I started to fall in love with the game already. Just right there, I started to fall in love with it. And it kind of continues with that. As I said, because everything you get like is relating to the story. And yes, because the ultimate – villain, the actual, like, the killer is being possessed by a young girl that was killed during the Salem witch trials, and she's basically killing it, like, and that's the thing, like, it is a mystery. Those things you discover will help give you hints towards what's happening before the game, before the game's main story kind of hints into you, because right before the game gave you the cutscene where you're able to figure out, oh, you know, who they're going after, the targets are all women that in some way, young women, that in some way practice occultish activity. Like, they do tarot cards. They do some Wiccanism or whatever. Like, it's always some kind of thing that could be tied to witchcraft. And So these are the targets, and they're all being killed by essentially this young girl that was killed during that time period, mm-hmm. For similar reasons. And it's, I mean, and that's the thing that's great. Like, they wrap the setting into it. They wrap everything into, and that's the thing. There are still some surprises at the very end. Like how, like who she was possessing to do the kills.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what I really loved, actually, one of the things that I really loved, and I told my brother about this too, I was afraid of what the final conflict would be. And honestly, it was still kind of frustrating because it's a bit quick time of any, and they don't necessarily do a good job with part of it. Like, there's something you got to do before she does. You break her out of the dude she's possessing, and then you got to stop her from doing something.
Yeah.
And I forget what you had to do, but it wasn't very clear. I think that is probably the one big major problem I have with the game, is at the very end of the very climax, they're not very clear on something you got to do, and therefore you got to go do it over and over, and I don't think you can even skip... Could you skip the cutscene? I think you could skip the cutscene, or at least part of it.
Yeah, I think so.
But that's the thing. Like, I was expecting them to be... And if this was any other AAA video game, if this was any other AAA video game or publisher, she would have turned into this big, evil, demon, monster, beast thing that you would have had to have somehow fought off.
Yes.
No.
It would have been the big final boss fight, but that's not really what it was at all.
And you don't have that. Instead, it's kind of a conversation. I mean, I still wish they did a little bit of something else to go with it, but
yeah.
They don't do that at all. It's more about what's going on with the character of Ronan and his revelations and how, like, what he figures out and everything. But you save the day. And honestly, in an era where every video game with an adult male and a young teenager girl or something like that ultimately ends up being a sort of, you know, surrogate father, surrogate daughter, or in The Last of Us's case, a deconstruction of that, Murdered Soul Suspect, none of it. It's
no.
A ghost that happens to be an adult male and a teenager that happens to be a psychic female.
And who is very independent and actually, like, pushes away your help on frequent occasions,
but
like
not,
she works with you kind of out of necessity, but not because she needs or explicit or well, not because she wants your help, but because she needs it for certain things. But she's very standoffish most of the time and very, very independently minded.
Not for stupid reasons, because yes. Honestly, the standoffish, like, I don't need none of your shit, Bozo. Like. That kind of attitude is written in very often in video games and always executed like shit. And yeah. Even done in movies and everything, like the strong independent woman that just doesn't need someone to help her until she realizes, yes, it is okay to accept help. No, it's not that at all. It's that she is legit, and you get to see a little bit of it too. She is legit tired of the idea that ghosts, like, because when ghosts find out she can hear them, she gets aggro, like they just nag her.
They want
to get messages out and everything like that, and she hates it.
She's tired of being relied on by everyone else who's kind of ignoring her plight but wants her help with theirs.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like that it makes her relatable in a sense. You understand because she is in trouble.
And it gives her, what I like about it is that it gives her a legit independence. She's not being standoffish with your character just because she, you know, as you said, she's standing there going, you know, just for the sake of saying, I don't need your help. It's someone who is legitimately independent and has found out how to make her own way in the world and is very confident in her means to do that. Which I think is really cool.
She's got her own goal, and at the very end of the story, she manages to achieve that goal.
Yeah.
But
it's kind of a fragile alliance that you have throughout the game, you know. She's working with you because you're working with each other to your own benefits, ultimately, is your motivations. That you help each other is a kind of a side effect of that.
And that's another thing. In a year that's been fraught with all kinds of, like, discussions about sexism and positive female characters, she is probably one of the best female characters in recent years in video games because she's very well defined. She's not defined by her gender.
No.
She is defined by her actions. She just happens to be female.
Yeah.
And
it's a very good point, actually. I hadn't thought of it in that deep a context, but you're right. The more I think about her character, the more the game doesn't shove it in your face. Yeah, the more I think about her character, the more I think, actually, yeah, this is a very good example of a strong, independent female character.
A well-developed female character.
Yeah. with strong motivation for being that way as well. Not in the interest of making a point, but to say, no, this is actually core to the development of this character's arc.
Which is a shame, because I will say, on the other hand, I actually kind of dislike how they treated the memories of Ronan's wife.
And yeah. That
they are all way too... They're all way too focused on Ronan, and mostly in a positive way.
Yes.
All you really get is the sense that she is really glad...
She's an anchor character for him, really. That's her purpose there.
I almost found all of her memories. I think there might have been one or two missing, but I only got a hint of anything going on with her own character. Which, I mean, you get a hint that for some reason she had to go to the asylum for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
You get a hint of that.
Yeah,
they don't really develop too much into it, and I was hoping as I got more of those, and you get a little bit of it, but you don't get much. I was hoping to get more of where she had to struggle with Ronan.
Yeah. It feels like one of the things that they didn't get to, you know, when I've talked about the things that this is a game that in many ways feels like they didn't get to finish the way they wanted. And that's certainly one of the aspects among it. I got every collectible in that game. I actually near the end used a walkthrough to get some of the ones I couldn't find because I wanted, you know, all the tidbits of this world that I could get. And yeah, her character, it feels like that they didn't fully get to explain what they had written up for her. I'm sure her character had a lot more in the design document than ended up getting into the game. It's unfortunate because the way she's presented is that she is really more of an anchor device for Ronan. You kind of, like you said, you know, she's there, for him to use as a reminder of the better parts of his life, which is not a bad thing, but it's the way she's presented is mostly about how it's impacting him and his motivations, and you don't get to learn a lot about, you know, what she did for him and how she maybe contributed to the way he is now, or how what he was doing affected her life as well. And it would have been nice to get that fleshed out more than it was.
Yeah, because all you really got when reading it was like, oh, how wonderful Ronan actually is and all this stuff. And some of the stories are entertaining. Some of them really are. And then some of, like one of the only ones that really sounds troublesome is when you find out his gun, and it's very early on, his gun is named after his mother, and it was a gift from his mother. And she's like, you know, this shit, like, I can never tell which one he's talking about, his mother or his gun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's actually kind of amusing. And it's showing a bit of frustration from her. But most of the time, you don't get that much, so it's hard to feel like she's a real person.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. As a result, it's like, I understand this is, you know, the kind of reward he's really looking for, but there is no marriage that perfect. There is no pairing that perfect.
And a lot of Ronan's character development is framed around showing the very imperfect life he had. But they portrayed that element of it, which was more one of his more recent elements, is kind of a little more idyllic than it probably was in the real world.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I like Ronan's character very much, and I like the fact that he's got a troubled history, mm-hmm. and that you could get a sense of it, like when he talks to other people and how he interacts with them, that yes, this is a guy that clearly grew up with a bad attitude, but he's now good. Like, He's perfect for having an attitude, but still trying to do the right thing. And yet, he comes off as way too much of a paragon. Like, because that's the thing, I feel like even a character with that history, like even when he's trying to do better, there's going to be struggles. And even moments where his wife might have had issues just, I don't know, dealing with his past. And you don't get that much of it. You get mostly all the positive. And the more of it you get from, if anything, is from his brother-in-law. And even then, like, his brother-in-law is just mostly just pissed because his brother-in-law lost his sister. And now he lost his last tie to his sister. I mean, his brother-in-law is actually a really great character despite having very little screen time. Just for that kind of stuff. And that's what I mean. Like, this whole game, like, everything is so interwoven. And that's why, like, to me, what makes it really great is it knows how to do narrative. Like, the entire story is contained within itself. Everything wraps back in to what's going on. Even the cop that didn't trust Ronan, even he plays a key role. And they definitely try and set him up to be the villain as well, in some ways. But it's a red herring. They use him as a red herring, but you find out he's actually doing some real core stuff for the story. And it all just fits together so well that, again, like, to me, this, like, that's, you play Murdered Soul Suspect, and it might be easy, but you're playing it for the story. And when people say that it lacks replay value, and that's another thing, man, do you never read a book a second time?
Yeah.
Do you never watch a movie a second time?
Yeah.
What?
A game like that, I don't play for replay value. I mean, you don't play any adventure game for replay value either, right? I mean, it's, you get to the end of it and you've experienced it, and that's, you know, that's it. But that's kind of the point of adventure games. Like, that's kind of how they work.
But not even just that. I mean, someday I'm going, I got books on my shelf right now that I've got Ender's Game right there. I've read that book like four times, maybe. I've got Sphere by Michael Crichton. I've read that book at least four times as well. Who's to say I'm not one day going to play Murdered Soul Suspect again? Oh, it doesn't have replay. It doesn't have a carrot and a stick? No. Which people are starting to complain about in video games again. Again, see Destiny, where all of those elements that are like the MMORPG, all of that stuff is a carrot dangling in front of you to give you reason to play. If you did not have that, you would have played it like Halo, once through the campaign and then maybe for the multiplayer. I mean, that's the thing that people just don't... I mean, a game's replay value shouldn't be predicated on, does it have a carrot and a stick to bring me back? Yes, it's an adventure game. Yes, I mean, once you've played it once, you kind of... But you know what? I played the Phoenix Wright games twice now for the most part. The first two, at least, and then the third one I played once. But I think I played them twice, and you know what? They were still fun the second time. You know what it took? A year or two of not having played them, so I could forget everything. And then you go back and you enjoy it again. If I play Murdered Soul Suspect again around Christmas time this year, I guarantee you I'll still have a great time because I'll have forgotten a lot of stuff. You know, and even if I don't, then, hey, I mean, I get to experience a good story again. Maybe I get to find more of the collectibles. I mean, that's the thing. Like, how people judge replay value in video games is really kind of screwed up to me. And that this one doesn't have it. It's like, I'm sorry, but do you seriously never watch a movie after the first time you've seen it? I mean, yeah. Play a movie doesn't have a carrot and a stick for you.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I didn't care at all that this game didn't have what would traditionally be called replay value, because, yeah, like, you brought up Destiny is a game that technically has a lot of replay value in it, but, you know, the chief complaint about that everybody has about Destiny is that you have to replay the same thing over and over again too many times. So it may have replayability, but how much replay value is in there, you know? And that's the thing, is taste is subjective and whatnot, but a lot of when it comes to something like this, like, people would say, you know, yes, I'm going to bring up Gone Home again. You know, people, that was a game that everybody loved. That game has no more replayability than this does, or that Grim Fandango, which just got a remastered version that everybody's, you know, hyped about as well. That is a game that has no more replayability either, because when you hit the end of the story, you've seen it, that's it. You know, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's a very good thing. You know, most people, what people like about games like those is the fact that they do have a self-contained tale and a self-contained narrative. And when you get to the end of it, you've seen it and, you know, that's it. You feel satisfied in what you got out of that, which is definitely how I felt when Murdered Soul Suspect ended. It felt like a nice, contained experience. And it's not something that I would want. I like the way that story was told. I wouldn't necessarily want to come back and, you know, play it again and, you know, make different choices and get a different ending or something like that. You know, I like the fact that they were able to tell the story they wanted to tell in the way they wanted to and not leave it up to, you know, not allow you to write your own adventure. Sometimes I just like to be told the story rather than, you know, create it as I go.
Yep. And you know what? As anyone that's going to listen to me talk about film, too, another thing that you get is if you watch film multiple times, you'll start to pick up on stuff that the director did with the camera. You'll start to pick up on stuff that they did in the story. And, like, there is an advantage to knowing things ahead of time when you're going through a creative work. And for a reviewer of a video game, like, and that's the thing, like, when it comes to the Ramble Pack games, I am no longer going to review, like, do a video on a game that I played through once. I'm going to require it be a game that I played through before. So when I go through, I have an idea of what to expect, so I know what more to look for, and I have a thesis prepared, because that's the thing. Now with Murdered Soul Suspect, if I play through the game again, I'm going to have more information, I'm going to know more of what to look for, and now I can better analyze and dissect what they did with the story and the gameplay. And that is something that game critics really ought to be able to understand. I mean, granted, not everyone's going to have that. Your average gamer, just like your average moviegoer, isn't going to pay attention to stuff like that. But at the same time, your average gamer isn't playing nearly as many games as a game reviewer either. No. Even though it feels like the big thing is everyone's got to get, like, what, 2 games a month these days. And that's the thing. Like, you have so many, I mean, what's wrong with having, like, maybe a few games you get a year and one of them being Murdered Soul Suspect? And yes, at some point you play it again because you liked the story. I mean, back in the day, man, how many games did I have for the Super Nintendo? Do you know how many times I beat Star Fox and Mega Man? Yep. The only reason they would have, quote-unquote, replay value is because they're completely predicated on the experience, the arcade experience of shooting things in, you know, combat. Oh, we want games that are about more than just violence. Well, you're fucking dinging it for lack of replay value, man.
Yeah. And Murdered Soul Suspect is a game that has very... It has a story that has a lot of violent elements to it, but it's not
a game... But it's not really violent.
Well, it's... No, like, it's violent in that you're being told the story that has violent elements in it, but the most real violence there is in the game, at least that you participate in, is taking out those rays, which in many ways, because of the way the rays are framed, you're actually doing them a favor by doing that. Like, you're technically... You're helping them by removing them from their torment.
That's the thing. You see them pull the original soul out.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of cool looking. You see him pull the original soul out, and it's never the same soul either. Like, you'll see a guy in a business suit one time, and then you'll see just some random, like, woman
another exactly. time. Yeah. And, I mean, that's the thing that I you know, if I were to say what you know, really impressed me the most about Murdered Soul Suspect and made it really stand out for me versus a lot of other games that we've seen is the fact that it does do so many things different in terms of the characterization, in terms of the fact that it is, it's funny, until we just started talking about it right this second, I never really thought about it as a game that, as a big console game that actually is very minimal in terms of its portrayal of violence and violent themes. Like, there's, you know, there's discussion of that in there, but there's very little active amount of that.
The most violent thing you see on screen, really, if I recall correctly, is, I mean, you mostly see aftermath stuff.
There's a car crash and stuff that you see, but it's mostly just what, like you said, the aftermath of it, not it happening. But
most of what you see, you actually witness, is Ronan's death in the beginning when he gets shot by the murderer.
Which, and you know, which has a very, very strong point to it, yeah. And it's not graphic, you know, it's not over the top, it's not anything like that. And I never really thought of it that way, but it's a very interesting point, is that, I find it interesting because we were talking, you know, when we were on our little thing there about replayability and stuff, and this is a game that certainly has much more violence in it, but one of the other things that I find interesting is a game last year that was, also had mixed reception, but certainly not to the degree this did, and is another game that I think you liked a lot, was Alien Isolation. And that's an interesting title because that has obviously a lot of violence in it, but
it's not the same way.
Not the same way, and it's a game.
At least not as far as I got.
Yeah, and it has. But it's interesting because it's a game that again, it's a single player only game that has a story that it's telling you. You know, it's linear in its progression. You're seeing the story they want you to see. And when you get to the end of it, sort of that's the end of it, and that's where it goes. And it's a game that has combat in it, but it's not your typical active combat, shoot your way through everything type game. It's a game that has a lot of downtime, a lot of idle time, a lot of tension in it, which this one does as well. And it's interesting because while the reception for Alien Isolation was a lot higher, and from a production value and sort of amount of content standpoint, you know, I can maybe see why that was. At the same time, you know, that game has a lot of the same quote-unquote faults that Murdered Soul Suspect does, which is that it's not, you know, it doesn't have replayability, you know, and that you can't, if you go back to it, you're going to see the same thing every time, that, you know, that kind of thing.
I'd actually disagree, and that's the thing. Alien Isolation's not exactly comparable, because, firstly, it is based off of a beloved franchise.
Sure.
And it's also an execution that people have been waiting for, which is closer to the first movie, rather than just another imitation of the second movie. And third...
And it was a good Aliens game, which everyone had been waiting forever for.
speaking as someone that still hasn't beaten the game because it freaks them the hell out, if you die and then you go back to a level, that alien's not always doing the same thing.
No, it's
and
not.
And I think... And they do release challenge maps and stuff like that, and I think... That's where Alien Isolation might get its quote-unquote replay value is, especially if you boost the higher difficulty, trying to outsmart and outrun the alien.
That's true, yeah. There's something that's a little – yeah, there's nothing like that in Murdered Soul Suspect for sure. I mean, Murdered Soul Suspect doesn't even have difficulty levels. You know, you're just doing the sort of one thing, and it's not a game that would have benefited from – variance in difficulty either, I don't think.
And honestly, even if the soundtrack gets a bit creepy once in a while, it's not really a scary game.
No.
Murdered Soul Suspect is just is more of a game that I would recommend. And that's the funny thing. Like, I am probably going to get this game for my sister and brother-in-law at some point because neither one of them is very experienced at video games, but I know my sister loves crime dramas, like crime serials and stuff like that. And she loves supernatural stuff. Like,
this is a game you don't have to be a hardcore gamer to be able to play to completion. Like, it's not that
demanding.
That's
one of the reasons. That's one of the reasons. Like, my brother-in-law loves horror. My sister got him The Evil Within, and he is struggling with the first chapters.
Yeah, that's a – yeah, if you're not a hard big-time gamer, that would be a hard thing to start in.
And that's the thing. Like, there's so many games right now – that critics especially, and it's like, what don't we want this genre of entertainment to be, this medium rather, this entertainment medium to be more open to more player types? Don't we want it to be, and here's a game that's perfect for it. You have a good story, you have accessible gameplay, and you have well-written characters, male and female. I mean... The only thing that it really has going against it is quite a whitewashed cast.
Yeah.
I'm not sure there's a there's a random black dude in the beginning.
There is.
But, I mean, that's like the greatest sin I can really give this game in regards to its ability to really appeal to a mass market.
And it's interesting because, yeah, this is a game that I think compared to a lot of big console releases actually does have more mass market appeal based purely on the fact, like we were just talking about, that it's not, you know, it's not super difficult. It's something that it's not high pressure. It's not high intensity throughout. It's something that, you know, people who are not big time gamers could pick up and get into and have a, you know, and be able to complete without too much difficulty. And if anything, I think this has more mass market appeal in that regard, but you know, it was not pushed as such, and only people who devoutly follow this stuff and were really looking for it were the ones who were exposed to it to any real degree, I think.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a shame. But I do really think that if this had come out, you know, rightly or wrongly, whether or not we think it's worth $60, I think if this is something that they had decided to price at $40, I bet it would have moved a few more units. It would have hit better. That impulse line for more people, I think.
It would have rated higher to some people. It would have gotten...
From a value proposition standpoint, yeah.
But if anything, to me, it just proves how inconsistent and just... And again, like I've said it before, I don't care if people think I'm conceited now, but fucking games writers and reviewers suck.
Yeah, they do. A lot of them do.
I'm just going to flat out say it because this game is a perfect example of why people don't know what the hell they're fucking talking about.
Yeah. Or they don't know, you know, in the case of a lot of people, it's that they don't know. They either don't know what they want or they don't.
They're consumers that make few typos. Game reviewers are consumers that make very little typos. And the last person that knows what they really want is a consumer.
Yeah.
All right?
And I would say that the problem is that, yeah, they either don't know what they want or they don't. Or they espouse one thing when they mean something else. You know, it's the same complaint people have made about gamers in general for years, which is that gamers say they want new and interesting experiences, they want innovation, they want this and they want that. But all the new unknown ideas that come out, at least in the big budget space, you know, nobody shows up.
That don't adhere to ideas of what a big budget game should be.
Yeah, everybody says they want something new, and then nobody buys it, and then they wonder why we don't get anything new. And
yeah, this is why we can't have nice things.
Yeah, really, that's what it comes down to. There was actually
because I knew there was something else that the game did too. And I meant to bring it up long ago when we were talking about the female character. I wish I remembered her name. Rona's like the only one I really remember, because he's the protagonist, but. The other thing I did want to mention when it comes to the gameplay is I actually really appreciated there were moments where you had to guide the young woman, the teenage girl, had to guide her through an environment because you as a ghost aren't able to be seen, and you could also get stuff to sort of freak out. They call it poltergeist. Like you could make cameras malfunction. You get TVs or fax or copiers like to suddenly go on to Fritz, and it would distract people, and then you could be able to signal her to go.
Mm-hmm. Joy is her name, by the way.
Joy, okay.
Yes.
So you'd be able to signal for Joy to go and move on to the next area. And I really liked those because that was another thing that could have been done really horribly, but the Joy always knew when to go. And when she went, there was no, like, caught in the middle of progression. It was, okay, you did what you needed to do. And it was another puzzle type thing. And I kind of wish they got some more intricate or fully realized versions of that. But otherwise, I just really... That was a really well done set of things. Like, so you had a variety of different experiences. And it wasn't always there either. One quote unquote level might have you escorting Joy for a brief period of time, and then another level, she won't even be there at all. And the game always made it feel natural why she was there. They always gave reason to the story. And again, it's like everything wrapping up together. They gave her a narrative reason to be present so they could break up the gameplay with something a little different. You know, that's what I mean. Like, it's more than just mechanical polish. It's narrative polish as well. Everything was just well done and well put together. And as you say, Jared, like, maybe gameplay-wise, it does feel like this game wasn't able to fully bake. But when you play through the game's story, until the end, I mean, to me at least, until the very ending where they kind of do rush through the final encounter, it feels like a fully realized game because it is a fully realized and well-executed story. And I really would not have minded them doing another game of a similar premise of someone that is murdered and now they must solve their own murder, but a different character in a different town with a different situation with similar gameplay elements. I would have loved a sequel to this. Highly doubt we're going to get it. And it is a shame because... Airtight games, you know, Dark Void, very flawed in its design. I will go ahead and tell you that right now. Quantum Conundrum, It was very much trying to be Portal.
Yeah, it was.
And
it wasn't bad. It was actually kind of good.
It wasn't bad, but the thing is, because it was trying very much to be Portal, it was very, very clear how efficiently and thoroughly Valve focus tests their games, and Airtight Games clearly did not. It was not nearly as well polished. The dialogue was not nearly as well. It wasn't as tight. It wasn't as thorough. They didn't know how to be concise. They thought having a guy say a lot of things would be funny enough. Yeah. GLaDOS was never verbose.
No.
GLaDOS was always succinct.
Yeah, she was witty.
She was witty, but, and that's the thing. It was always, it was well executed. It was well done. And they continued that even with, what was his name, Wesley? Not our Wesley, the Wheatley.
Yes.
Even with Wheatley, they knew how to keep him from talking too much.
Yeah.
And that was a character that easily could have talked too much.
Yes.
And in comparison, Quantum Conundrum, it just, I couldn't do it. And that's the thing. A couple hours in, I got stuck on a puzzle in Quantum Conundrum. Never got stuck on a puzzle in Portal 1 or 2. Never. Quantum Conundrum, I got stuck to the point that I was just like, eh. And I never went back.
That's basically what happened to me, too. Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, it is clearly not as well focus tested. It is clearly not as well, and that's the thing. Like, it would have been a better game, but because we already played Portal, you got to compare it to that. But Murdered Soul Suspect, my closest comparison right now is L.A. Noire, which...
And yeah, that's the closest thing, but even that's kind of...
No, I got more. Yeah. But I mean, that's the thing. L.A. Noire is close, but there's too much combat. There's too much open world Rockstar bullshit.
Yes. Driving around. And I like that game too, but yeah.
Oh, I love L.A. Noire, but yeah. It is clearly a Rockstar game.
Mm-hmm.
The Walking Dead Season 1, which, I mean, I've already talked about. I mean, I love it. I made a great video for it with you on YouTube. But I have already gone over 8,000 times its technical issues.
Yeah.
And then I had another comparison here. Oh, yeah. Oh, and then the Phoenix Wright games, which are visual novels more like, but they still got investigation in the story and everything.
Yeah.
And Murdered Soul Suspect is a really good game. Like, when you compare it to all of those, honestly, to me, it is worth it, the $60 more, because there are fewer moments where I'm frustrated.
Yeah.
There are fewer moments where I'm struggling with, be it the game's shitty design, such as L.A. Noire, or the game's technical faults, such as The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And it clearly has a bigger budget than Phoenix Wright. So to me, $60 isn't asking much. It is a game with a really good, well-done story that I'm going to want to experience again. And it's just, I really loved it. And yes, you're right. I mean, it is flawed because there are moments, like, again, let's go back to when I was discussing the escort missions. There were times where you had to time triggering a thing to go off, like, just perfectly to distract, like, two cops at one point.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there, like, trying over and over again, like, why the hell isn't the other guy getting distracted? What the hell's going on? And finally he was distracted, and it was like, okay, fine, whatever. And then there are times where you'll sit there, it's like, oh, there's an object I want to interact with. I really wish there was a proper cursor in this game, because I can't.
You can't aim the camera just right to get the.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is not a perfect game. And again, like, the final boss, there were some issues that made it a little frustrating. And towards the end, the last encounter with the Wraith/demons was kind of shitty. But when it comes to the whole, it was a much better experience than I would get playing so many other games from start to finish. And honestly, I really do think, as a publisher, of Western games, even, surprisingly, Square Enix will ultimately be a very good thing for this industry. This is a game that's an example of it. The way that what they've done with games like Hitman and Tomb Raider, and now they're bringing out Don't Nod's Life is Strange, which is getting a lot of positive response. I really think Square Enix is going to prove to be a really good presence in the Western publishing business. When it comes to Japanese games, it's a little up in the air. We'll see. But they're doing really good work right now, and I think this game is a perfect example of it, and it's a real shame that when Airtight Games finally put out something that was honestly really good and really worth putting them on the map, they had to shut their doors.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I hope this does, you know, this is a game that unfortunately for most people kind of came and went and without, you know, without much of a fanfare, but I do hope because a lot of the people I know that played it and enjoyed it think about it with the sort of level of passion for it that we do, and I do hope that this inspires someone else to try this out, and you know, whether it's in the indie game space or even a publisher that wants to try this as maybe a bit more of a budgetary focused project, which some publishers seem to be getting into trying these days, like Square and like Ubisoft even. I hope that we get to see something else like this, because like I said, there were really, really good ideas in here. I think what they managed to get out, given the clear time and money constraints they had, was impressive. And I think if they could have had just a little bit more time, this could have been something really, really impressive. And I'd like to see the idea experimented with for sure, because it was a really interesting mix of Western development based on some, you know, Japanese mythology is not the right word, but Japanese, you know, supernatural ideas and things like that. And I liked what I saw. I hope that we get to see more stuff like that for sure.
And honestly, I kind of hope, because I think that might be part of it, because when you get right down to it, to me, I always felt like Japanese games were better at the story aspect of games than in Western games. I mean, I know everyone is very reverent about BioWare and everything, but get right down to it. Stories feel so much more whole and better executed in Japanese games. I mean, not all of them, clearly. Mega Man's got a horrible story, every one of them. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of them, when I think of games with really good stories, I do think of Japanese games most of the time. And I would love to see, and I would not doubt that collaboration is part of why the story to Murdered Soul Suspect is really good. Now, I'd love to see more collaborations of this nature, so maybe Western studios can start to get better at executing the story, and therefore we can get better written games over here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's overall my kind of a hope, but at this point, I think we need to wrap up because we have been talking for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised that you and I were able to do this conversation as we did. I mean,
what I'll tell people is that this game's been out for about 8 months now, and it didn't sell very well when it did come out. So you can find it cheap in a lot of places. It's on both next gen and previous gen consoles. It's on of the Xbox and PlayStation variety, and you can get it on PC as well. It's been 50% off or more on PC multiple times. It was actually, the sale's off now, but the Square Enix Europe store actually had it for 80% off on PC the other day.
You know what might have actually hurt the game in reviews too, now that I think about it? Because I played it on PS3, and unlike Destiny and Alien Isolation, I would not have really thought of this game as being intended for next gen.
It very much wasn't. Like, the PS4 version looked like the last gen versions, except it dropped frames less. That was really the only thing. It's an Unreal Engine 3 game. It was made for last gen systems. They just did a quick uprezzing to the new ones to get it out on those machines.
All right, because I really did not notice any frame rate drops even.
No, I mean, you can
very much like a current gen game.
Yeah, so. You can get it on all those systems. Like, if you got, you know, if you only have a next gen machine, then you can get it there, but it's available in a lot of places, which is nice. And I'm sure you can find it either new or in the used bin for nothing these days. So it's
and it looks like most of the reviews were PS4, Xbox One, and PC.
Yeah.
So I can guarantee you a lot of the dings also came out of, you know,
yeah,
whether it's worth being a next-gen title.
Definitely.
Look at how a lot of the early Wii U games, like, does this justify buying a Wii U?
Yeah. It's very much that, but yeah, you can get the game pretty cheap now, and I would highly recommend it. If you're even mildly curious about it, I would give it a chance for sure, because it's something that I think a lot of people wrote off based on reviews and buzz around it, but that I think a lot more people, you know, once sitting down and playing it might go, actually, there's something special here. And that's what I said about it in my review, is that it's a game that's got a lot of problems, but when I finished it, I was just like, this is one of those titles that just, you have a feeling in your gut that there, you know, that this is something special, and that's really what I think about it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I've said all my positive stuff for the most part, so.
Yeah.
You guys know how I feel, so. Hopefully, I mean, considering my audience, hopefully a number of you feel like this game is worth checking out, if you haven't already. And, you know, if you did listen to the podcast, I mean, hopefully, you know, if you have played the game, hopefully we just kind of confirmed a lot of what you felt about it. I mean,
if you played the game already, good on you, because most people didn't.
And if you have any thoughts towards it, I mean, feel free to comment on either Facebook, my blog, you know, any, wherever you found this. So, like, feel free to leave a comment, and I'll see if I can read it and find it. But until then, I mean, yeah, I'm Chris Cicerano. You can find me on gamertag.net, youtube.com/RamblePack64, search RamblePack64. You can find me on iTunes and facebook.com/RamblePack64. Just to follow along on any of that stuff. And Jerry, people can find you at geekbravado.com.
Yep.
And if you can just search on YouTube for Parallax Abstraction or Retro Flashback, because his name, man.
Yep. I created it back in the day because no one else would use it, and nobody else has. So
yep,
yeah. No, I put a bunch of stuff up in the last week. I did a retro flashback of a weird interactive movie for PC from the 90s called Siberia, which I ended up doing a short full playthrough of later. Which, you want to see an interactive movie that breaks my brain? Watch that, because there's some pretty funny moments in it. And just today, actually, just before we sat down to record, I put up my retro flash forward sort of little review of the Grim Fandango remastered edition, which just came out. So that's up now, and I've got more stuff coming soon. I announced in the last episode that I was going to do a full playthrough of Star Wars Republic Commando, and I'm probably going to start recording that this weekend, so I'm looking forward to that a lot.
There you go.
Yep.
All right. And next week, be on the lookout for my next episode of Norwood Film Club, and we are going to be discussing Fight Club.
That'll be good.
That ought to be good. That'll be really good. Spoilers, naturally, and pretty major ones.
Yeah.
So I hope you'll look forward to that. And again, I mean, I basically got a good month kind of covered, because then after that, it's me and Wesley finally verbally duking it out over the Halo series.
Mm-hmm.
And then the week after that is Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Nice.
And don't know what we're going to do in regards to video games the week after that, though. So we'll be thinking about it, and if you want, you know, if there's any specific franchise or series or game you want us to discuss, like we did Murdered Soul Suspect, then just leave a comment, you know, let us know. All right, hope you guys enjoyed, and have a good night.
Take care, all.